in West Baltimore. And in Northeast Baltimore, there were streets over there that they were not allowed to live in. And because South Baltimore was a rundown area and blacks were cramped down there. That was another, we had the housing problem that we fought along with the other battles, such as employment. And then, of course, when we started buying property, we had problems with the lending institutions. We had to break down those barriers. Now, I'm saying all of this, I don't want to give the impression that we're not still in many of these same fights, because we are.
Mm-hmm. In the 1950s, as we shoot up in time, Dave Glenn has mentioned that the Urban League was the real, the primary moving organization. Of course, associated, I mean, people wore two hats in a sense, the Urban League and the NAACP. NAACP and CORE, or
right.
The CORE wasn't
right.
Mm-hmm. Around here at that time. But he said in one of his interviews that the Urban League was really pushing in the period, say, 51 to 57, particularly with accommodations, public accommodations and jobs.
That is true. Very true. Furman Templeton, that I mentioned earlier, was in charge of the Urban League during this time. Mm-hmm. And they took a leading role in pushing, but many of us wore, as you said, many of us wore two hats. We belonged to the same organizations and we were fighting the same cause. But that is true, the Urban League did, both locally and nationally.
Were there any conflicts at that time between the Urban League and the NAACP, between what Dr. Jackson was trying to do and what Mr. Templeton was trying to do?
One of the things that I think has always made our efforts prior to these most recent times, and when I say these most recent times, I'm talking about the last 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years, but one of the things that we did here in Baltimore that I feel made our efforts successful was that we had a certain amount of unity. Now, that isn't to say that there was not criticism from one or the other about methods, but basically our aims were the same, and we just threw our efforts together, and because we realized that in unity there was strength. But there wasn't a great deal of friction between organizations as we find existing now, no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even CORE, when they first came to Baltimore, were greeted in a different sense than what CORE is greeted today. And I think you no doubt know why, because their philosophies have changed. And many of the things that they are doing now is not as well known as the things that they were doing then. And their leadership has changed drastically. But usually, although we didn't have too many organizations, you know. And so those that we did have usually banded together, and we didn't have a lot of friction. I think that's what you're asking.
Yeah, yeah. Was what I'm getting at here, I guess, is how the establishment, the city government, the state government, then Governor McKeldin, how did the city and state react to what Dr. Jackson was trying to do and the Urban League in the 50s? I mean, that was, from what I understand, when demonstrations and active picketing, certainly at least from Urban League members, was.
Well, as I said, Governor McKelvin.
At a high pitch, shall we say.
Governor McKelvin, we found to be a helpful individual in our fight. We didn't have that cooperation on the city level until such time as he came back to be mayor.
Right.
And we again had that help. I don't mind saying we met a great deal of resistance on the part of, and then we had Agnew, who was governor, and believe you me, we got a great deal of resistance from that angle. You know, we have had many bar fights in Baltimore City. Schools, bars being built near schools. I participated in an outstanding fight that was known as the Far Side End Bar that was allowed to be put up. There was a law in written city for city schools that no bar was supposed to be within 250 feet. This bar, proposed bar owner, happened to be the brother-in-law of our now present Governor Mandel. And Mandel was the Speaker of the House. So it was because of political strength that the man was allowed to put his bar there. We've had many civil rights, and CORE was very, very active about bars, and something I failed to say was the integration of bars. We had, that was during your early 50s, and we had a great deal of trouble with this bar situation in Baltimore City. We were able to get some help from city government on this particular fight.
How were these fights carried out in the same way?
Through organization, through picketing. You know, one of the things that was a great weapon, though we always were reluctant to use it, was to take to the streets. It just seemed like we never were able to get anything done until we took to the streets, and naturally our court fight.
In the early 60s, say from 60 to 64, it seems as though a lot on the books changed. The Omnibus Civil Rights Bill of 1963, when, of course, Governor McKelvin became mayor of the city. And from what I understand, Tommy D'Alessandro is.
I'm so happy you mentioned him.
Council.
I failed to mention the efforts on the part of our mayor, Tommy. Now, his father was inclined to be in sympathy with the movement, but it was actually the son. Well, maybe I shouldn't say actually the son, because I think the time wasn't as right when his father was mayor as it was when he became mayor. But he was a very hopeful mayor who recognized the problems of all people in the city, who recognized that blacks were becoming a major portion of the population, and that they too should be considered. He was an active mayor who believed in going out into the public and listening to what they had to say, even as president of the city council.
What do you think was, or what was your reaction, and what was felt when the Civil Rights Bill was passed in 1963?
Well, of course, as we look back now, we find that it wasn't as much of a great victory as we thought at that time, because we'd been struggling so long to get just such a tight thing. But at the time that it did come into being, we were all very happy and we felt that our efforts had not been in vain. Because there were moments now that we were desperate as to consequences of our actions.
At the same time, though, I understand that there was another public accommodations bill that failed to pass in the city in the same period.
In the city or in the state?
It may have been in the state. I can't, my memory's a little skewed.
I know there
were
also
sections of the civil rights bill that didn't pass.
That didn't pass. Right. And still recently there have been efforts on the part. Let me say this too. One particular change was that we were able to get more black legislators, I'll say, in the 60s. And there was a great deal of legislation introduced that did not pass in both the city council and the state government. And they had to be bills that were on the books had to be tested and were tested and were tested. Now, some of them did not prove to our advantage. Some did, however, prove to our advantage. One of the outstanding fights that has been going on for a long time is the fight about who should appoint the police commissioner, the governor or the mayor. And it had such an impact on blacks because of police brutality. And when I say police brutality, I'm saying that in quotes.
Yeah.
There has been, and there continues to be, a great concern on the part of blacks because of police brutality. And we've had that fight constantly. So blacks were interested in who would be a commissioner because there has been a lot of controversy about our present commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, as you no doubt know, the much, much offered bill was signed into law by the present governor that the police commissioner be named by the mayor of the city of Baltimore. Now, ironically enough, the city of Baltimore pays the salaries of the policemen,
yes,
but they have no say over the police department. So we have to wait and see now what develops.
Yes, we certainly do. As Colonel Harris was speaking about that on Wednesday, and he seemed to have the same feelings.
I suppose Colonel Harris
not told sure
you
what happened.
I suppose he told you his own experiences, did he not?
Oh, yes.
So far as the department was concerned. And incidentally, he and I grew up together.
Mm-hmm.
And he became a very, very influential, he might not have told you this, but he became a very influential figure doing the riots. Oh, I don't call them riots. I like to refer to them as civil disorders in Baltimore City. He has always been able to establish rapport with people in all walks of life. And the word that was most outstanding during those days was militant. You know, in my day, when I first started out, we were called radicals. So it went from radicals to militants. And we always, Box at a very early age in life was given the nickname of Box. Colonel Harris was known as,
yes,
Box Harris. And the militants used to say, send us Box. And Box could go amongst them and create what no other member of the police department was able to establish. And he, of course, he was head of the first community relations division of the police department. And Mayor Tommy D'Alessandro, the son, had a black on his, in his administration, whose name was Joe Smith. And you see here at this agency, although I've been here since 1967, most of my experience has been working in the community relations division. Mm-hmm. I was not doing what I'm doing now. And my responsibilities were working directly with the community. Mm-hmm. And I had the occasion during those very, very hot summers that we refer to as riots to work directly with Colonel Box Harris, with Joe Smith, and directly with the mayor too. And of course, David Glenn was head of our agency at that time, and then Marguerite Campbell was also working in the mayor's office, and we got out there in that street, and believe me, we were out there all hours of the night trying to keep things cool in the city. And it was, and Walter Carter, whom I mentioned sometime back, who head of CORE at one point and a very outstanding civil rights leader in Baltimore City, Reverend Vernon Dobson, Reverend Marion Bascom, Perrin Mitchell, Juanita Mitchell, her mother, all of us were out there in that street trying to bring about an understanding between blacks and whites and city government. Mm-hmm. City government. One of the things that disturbs me now is that we do not have the rapport between the black community and city government that once existed. Under this mayor, we don't have it.
On that line, from what I understand, Dr. Jackson was pretty much able to walk into the mayor's office.
Dr. Jackson was pretty much able to walk in everybody. But I will say this, Dr. Jackson was recognized by the commissioner of the city of Baltimore, police department. She was able to get his ear when nobody else could. Nobody else could. And she was respected by top level administrators in the city.
Did she have the same kind of rapport with both D'Alessandro and McKeldin when they were mayors?
Oh yes, oh yes.
She was able pretty much to deal with anyone who came along.
Yes.
And
yes. Mm-hmm. She was recognized and respected highly.
After 1966 and the CORE National Convention in Baltimore City and the setting up of the Target Youth Program, Target City Youth Program in East Baltimore, and the disturbances or disorders, whatever word one wishes to use, in Cambridge, and then after Martin Luther King's death in 68, what kind of role was Dr. Jackson and yourself in the, what kinds of things were you doing during the summer?
Well, I mentioned to you
during that
that we were acting more or less as liaison people between the black community and city and state government. And that was basically our role. And I mentioned to you the fact that Fox Harris had rapport, and Joe Smith had rapport. And I mentioned to you my own small part with the community. I and Perrin Mitchell, I forgot to say, was out there too. I like to think that we played a very important part in bringing about the solutions as quickly as they were brought about. And Dave Glenn was another one that was out there all hours of the night pitching. And I do feel, in fact, I know that it was because of such people as I have named as I've gone through this, that we were able to create. Reverend Vernon Dobson opened up his church where we had spontaneous meetings whenever it was necessary. To keep our finger on something that was out there. You know, the grapevine is a tremendous instrument in keeping tabs and keeping your finger on things. And this is what we did. And I really believe sincerely that the mayor appreciated the efforts of the black leaders in Baltimore City. They were recognized by him. And this in itself showed something. It showed yes. something.
How did you and these other leaders who had been involved for so many years working in a certain way and pushing with certain approaches react to A.Trap Brown and Stokely Carmichael and people and SNCC and Black Panthers started here in 66? Let me say something before I answer that.
Mm-hmm. I failed to mention to you that one of the things that was highly necessary was to have good press during these times. Mr. Carl Murphy was then living, and he was head of the Afro-American. He was a great help through his paper and his personal efforts in helping to bring about peaceful settlements. Now, to answer your question as to how such people as Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown, etc., were accepted, those of us who worked directly with the problem could understand where such people as Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown was coming from. Those of us who worked directly with the problem, did not always approve some of the methods used, but we felt that it was better to join with them to try to get them to understand us as well as for us to understand them. But as far as the general public was concerned, I'm afraid that many blacks did not understand where these people were coming from. The transitional period was difficult.
And be about
the area that you're speaking about, the 66s and 7s and this kind of thing, it was very difficult to understand. But I think through the efforts of people who worked directly with these individuals, and Box was one of them. Stokely came to town several times, and there were meetings held with Stokely. And Box was a part of these meetings. Of course, it was later said that these two young men, were a part of national government, and that was their purpose. That has never been proven. It's only a strong belief. We had a young man here in Baltimore City, no doubt someone's mentioned him to you, who was with CORE and was a very, very strong influence on the civil rights movement and the civil disorder periods. And his name was Danny Gant. He was very helpful, and it was later said that he worked for the mayor of the city of Baltimore. That has never been proven. But let me say that such people as Danny Gant and Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown served a good purpose in many ways, though some of their actions were not always approved, nor were they understood. I hope that answers your mm-hmm. question.
Mm-hmm. Oh goodness, we're just zooming right through here. The Panthers.
Oh, you asked me about the Black Panthers. I knew it was some.
I had
the pleasure, and I say pleasure, mm-hmm. because the program that I saw that the Panthers put on in this city, I felt was outstanding and very helpful. Of course, one of my responsibilities as community specialist when I was in the community division was to work with every element that was found in the community. We had a group that was known as the Soul School, just about the same time as the Black Panthers. I worked directly with many members of both groups, the Soul School and the Black Panthers. Mm-hmm. We had an organization that maybe someone has told you about that was called the Black United Front. Now, this was a strange organization. And I say it was strange because it was made up of members from controversial organizations such as the Black Panthers, the Soul School, and other militants, in quotes. It was made up of some of our most outstanding leaders, such as Homer Favor at Morgan State College, Perrin Mitchell, ministers that I've named in the past, such as Reverend Vernon Dobson, and Marion Bascom, Reverend Marion Bascom, David Glenn, Evelyn Burrell, Box Harris. I mean, it was what you call a melting pot. And though the Black United Front was looked down upon by the police department, it had to be recognized for what it was, because it was one united effort on the parts of people from all walks of life who had a basic concern, and that was doing something about the problem here. I, as I said before, enjoyed working with the Black Panthers, and I worked directly with them. Mm-hmm. I have had the occasion to be called